And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And a special thank you, of course, to Brian Ayers, owner of Drynamic Solutions. That was a good segment. A lot of interesting things. And now, of course, if it is the first Monday of the month, as well as the fourth Monday of the month, and if it is 2:30, it must be the entrepreneurial spirit. Leanne, oh, there we go. Leanne Hall and Craig Dean. It's always nice seeing you guys. You brighten my day.
Well, thank you.
You always smile. Leanne, you are beautiful, too.
Wow.
She is.
Man, we need to start this show earlier in the day.
Yeah, like at midnight.
Yeah.
Once again, I'm chopped liver.
No, I was going to get to you.
You do like liver, though, don't you?
No.
You don't? I don't either.
Oh, come on. You had the deli for like a million years, right?
Chopped liver is much better than liver.
Oh, is it different?
Yeah, once chopped up.
Oh, I knew it. I love brisket, though.
Yeah. Not the dog, though.
No.
No. Oh, yeah.
Oh, you would have liked my dog brisket.
Yes.
Oh,
yep.
Man. So how are you? Both had a good weekend?
Yes,
we did.
Went to the opera.
It was so great.
How was it? Tell us about
it. It was my first time ever being at the opera.
What was your experience like?
It was I was excited about it. I was just thrilled to just be at the Orpheum. What an amazing theater it is. You just don't feel like you're here in Phoenix. You feel like you're somewhere in Europe. And I loved it that they had the words up there on the screen.
They did?
Yeah. So that makes it a lot easier.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
And was it the lead at your house? Oh, I forgot her name.
No, Annalisa was not in this one. It was a woman from Vienna, Austria was the lead in this.
She was great. We got to see her in some dress rehearsals before, and it was really neat to see the opera working up to the actual opera.
Dave, the staging, the costuming, the acting, the singing was spectacular.
It really was.
It is as good as anything you will see around the world.
And there's not
really
a bad seat in the Orpheum.
No.
We were up in the balcony.
Oh,
Craig was
theater.
Down on the front row. Of course, Craig always gets
How did you do that? You got the front. You were in the orchestra.
I was playing saxophone.
No way. You are pretty saxy.
He was
no, okay.
Playing air
hey,
saxophone.
Come on, that was funny. No one laughed.
He's like, ha ha.
There we go.
Oh, that was good.
So, and then you were somewhere else.
I was up on the balcony. My mom went with me, and it was her first time to go to the opera as well. She'd never been either.
And she liked
it. I didn't know that.
Yeah, we both did.
And John and Gail are such amazing people.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
Just great quality character people.
And they put their heart and soul into Dave. I can't even begin to describe how powerful that opera was. When they opened the curtain on the opening scene, there must have been, 50, 55 people on stage, all in their costuming, and there was smoke billowing through the stage to kind of set the first scene.
They kept their poses
for like three or four. It wasn't medical marijuana.
I was going to say that.
I'll go next time.
Do you think I can tell the bird story on the radio?
No, I do not.
Yeah, we got a
no bird story.
No, you don't think I can tell that story?
No, probably not.
I don't think so.
You don't think I can?
Well, at the break, tell me, and then I'll see if we need to edit it. We'll ask Kurt's opinion.
It's a funny story is what it is.
But the opera was beautiful.
Oh, it was.
Really,
and they had a pretty good turnout?
They had 800 people Friday night, and they had 1,000 on Sunday.
Well, that's nice, isn't it?
Yes.
And you know what was really neat is at the salon that we had at Craig's house, where we had about 60 people, to kind of preview this, there were some real strong critics there who loved the opera, who had always attended the Arizona Opera, and so they had never been to the Phoenix Opera, and they came Friday night to the Phoenix Opera, and they said it was incredible.
So these
were people that weren't just, virgins like me. They were experienced
gurus. In fact, the people who filmed the opera for Gail and John are going to be in our next show. At the end of March.
Oh, how cool.
Yes. I know, we're excited
for
that.
Yes, Anna Maria Davis, who produced the movie about her life story,
Fools Rush In,
with Selma Hayek and Matthew Perry.
Wow.
Yes.
And talk about acting and theater and all this. What a great show today.
Oh, yeah, this is going to be very interesting.
They're not in the studio just yet. However, should we give
a little appetizer about
who's coming in?
Yeah, well, the name people may recognize if they're from Arizona, Wyatt Earp, who plays Wyatt because he's a relative of Wyatt, and he will tell. I can't remember if he's his nephew or great great grandson or exactly what it is. And his wife Terry Earp, who has written 30 some plays, she's won several Arizona awards. Wyatt has won Arizona awards, and Wyatt,
Arizona.
Yeah, they're
called.
It's like a Tony Award.
It's like a Tony Award.
Yeah. Really, I've never even heard of that.
A-R-I-Z-O-N-I.
I thought that was just Minnesotan for Arizona awards or something.
Arizona.
You should come to the show more often. You're going to learn so much.
And so they won. I think it was, 1996 or 2006?
Oh, yeah. And she, one of the best, I've seen several of her plays, and I think for me the best one was she did a play about the life story of Jack Durant, who owned Durant's restaurant on Central Avenue.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
What a happening
story.
Place. That place in and of itself.
Well, you know, I don't know if you were, but Jack Durant was tied to organized crime.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Duh.
When was he around?
Well, he was kind of like a silent owner, but he was involved with the restaurant for many, many, many years. You know, they used to have the billboard saying, in my humble opinion, the greatest restaurant in the world, Durant's.
Really? And starring Joe Pesci?
Starring Joe Pesci. Have you ever eaten at Durant's?
No.
Oh,
it's a treat.
Where is it?
You have, oh my gosh, Dave.
When can we all go?
We have to
it's
go.
It's right on Central Avenue between Thomas and Osborne.
We just
on the
have
east
to
side
flip
of the
to
road.
See who's paying. It's not the
yeah,
cheapest
it's,
place.
Yeah, it's
in
right
town.
On Virginia, actually on the corner of Virginia and Central. But when I had my restaurant, Miracle Mile at Park Central, it was always like, who had more people, Durant's or us? It was
was
two really happening restaurants
right
close to each other.
Oh, how neat. And so they did a play on his life?
Yes. Well, Durant's was where all the deals were made in Phoenix.
For sure.
Every deal that was made in Phoenix in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s took place in Durant.
Really?
Politicians, everybody. And
still
that kind
does
of place
that?
You know, it's amazing. Uh-huh. They have the red leather booths and the black tables. And I mean, it's kind of dark. And they remodeled it about 2 years ago and put the exact decor back
in. Yeah, because that's what Durant's is.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, how cool.
Oh, and you walk through the kitchen to get into the restaurant, so you see the steaks here.
I was hoping to just surprise him with that. But
Oh, great.
Well,
now
we'll
I know the surprise.
Give him the bill.
Well, that will be a surprise in itself. Wow, so that's sort of cool. And,
yeah.
And of course, our guest, Terry, wrote also Menopause the Comedy.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And that came to become a musical out in Scottsdale. I saw that, actually. That was really good.
Did you see it, too? Yeah.
Wasn't it funny?
Yeah, it was very
funny. They're so talented, it's amazing. And Wyatt is a marathon runner, and he's done the Ironman several times.
That's right, in Hawaii, I believe.
Yeah.
And he's a Hawaii master in the, I think, YMCA master swim program, too, he does. And she has quite a background, too.
Well, she has an amazing background, and she has an amazing story to tell about how her life has been reshaped.
And that is what we were just talking about that before we went on the show, how people are having to do that right now. I guess you don't have to. You can stay stuck in the rut of your life, or you can figure it out, reinvent yourself, move on.
And very important. And sometimes life happens to you, you know, and it will. Terry will share her story on that, and that situation. I read about that. And you know, one day, your life changes dramatically.
Just like that.
But her mindset.
Yeah.
Stayed strong.
She never gave up.
Yeah.
That's
a role model, right?
Yes.
That's
someone.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's why it's so important for people to listen to today's story.
Absolutely.
It's not just about the plays. It's about the people behind the plays.
And that's the essence of the entrepreneurial spirit.
It really is. And I always like what you both say. It's not, you don't have to be an entrepreneur, just a business owner to have that spirit.
That's right.
So let's talk just a minute or two on that, because more people are not business owners, but this is valuable information.
You know, there's so much about that, and by putting yourself out there, and just doors open if you put yourself out to expose yourself to opportunities.
That's
you know,
I was just going to say the same thing.
Yep. Of this, in that looking at my life here, I've owned a construction business for 27 years, so I am an entrepreneur, but that's not working for me right now. The construction industry is not, so I had to find other alternatives. And interestingly enough, for those of you who heard Denise Ellert on our show with Lovitz, you know, I'm now employed by her. So I didn't know that was going to happen. That just happened the very next day after she was on the show. And through a sequence of events again, more doors are open. And who knows what the future, you know, we're watching. Craig has had experiences now. Now he's doing marketing for Moon Valley Country Club. Yeah. And we just continue to find new opportunities out there. And I think that that's really what it is more about the journey.
It's kind of the circle of life. It's really very interesting because, you know, having had the restaurant for 26 years, I could not wait to never do anything with food and beverage again. Because when I walked away from the restaurant, I went, I never have to deal with a kitchen again. And the irony of all this and what Leanne was saying, and it really started with the campaign.
Yeah, when I ran for Congress.
Because we networked with so many people. We were going to meeting after meeting after meeting. And all of a sudden, all these meetings started kind of making a lot of sense.
Your mind begins to open in areas that you didn't even know. They it wasn't even part of your thought process ever before.
And it was interesting because she and I had gone to interview with Troon Golf to get a job as consultants for them. You know, with her construction background and her marketing and all these things, my food and beverage background. Well, they had a hiring freeze and were not able to do any hiring. Well, and I was on the board of Moon Valley for 3 years, and I helped with food and beverage. And when my term was up on the board hired me through the golf course to do consulting for Moon Valley.
That is incredible.
I know.
So it was a backdoor entrance. Had we just taken the no,
right?
But, you know, we just kind of continued to open ourselves up to all kinds of opportunities and
You know, and that's the key, I believe, what you both are saying is that be aware, be open to what is right in front of you. You know, there's opportunities every second. It's really your mindset. Do you believe there are opportunities? If you don't, you won't see them.
Absolutely.
If you do, you will see them.
Well, and sometimes they're not the right. They're not where you're going to, you know, if stay put forever. You know, it's kind of like the difference between a perennial and an annual. You know, there are things that are meant to last and things that are just transitional. And you have to go, you have to enjoy the transitional things as well.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And in fact, you should just, one of the goals should just to be joyful. I mean, if you wake up every day and you make a decision to be happy, good things can happen to you.
Because that's what Dennis Prager talks about.
Attitude.
Happy.
Happy,
the choice.
It's
so much of it is your choice. And it's that book I talked about the other day when I was speaking at the Breakthrough Thinking Luncheon.
That's right.
The Powered by Happy. You know, what a perfect... What a perfect title, Powered by Happy. If we could all do that every day.
You know, and people think it's not a choice. They think something has to happen to you to be happy or to be sad. And it's sad that they just look at it
they're
that way.
They're waiting for something to happen to make
like
them happy.
Like Waiting for Godot. Did you ever read that book?
No.
Waiting for Godot.
But that was a movie.
I read the book.
Oh, the movie was hilarious because it was the same people who did Best in Show.
Yeah, it's
is that right?
It's like Who Moved My Cheese? It's
right,
like,
exactly. Godot never showed up.
That's right. You're banging your head against the wall, waiting for that dang cheese to show up.
And most people do that. You know, they're just waiting for something. It's going to be a long wait. In fact, eternity, they'll be waiting.
Well, it's miserable. You've missed then the opportunity of every day being able to get up, that you're alive and you're breathing.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with the Entrepreneurial Spirit, starring Leanne Hall and Craig Dean, and our special guests, Wyatt and Terry Earp. I love Tombstone, Kurt Russell, Val Kilmer, nothing better than that. And Kevin Costner also had a similar thing on Wyatt Earp during that time, but we'll be right back.
Weidenauer, Heighton & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heighton & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today. 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
What does your landscaping say about you?
I'm friendly to our planet.
I xeriscape.
I'm water smart.
I harvest rainwater for my landscape and garden.
I'm a free thinker.
My landscape is filled with flowers year-round.
I'm energy conscious.
I water wisely.
Clemente Design Landscape represents your vision with an understanding of what a well-designed and cost-effective landscape can do for you. Call us for a free one-hour consultation and evaluation at 602-540-3773. That's 602-540-3773. Or visit the website ClementeDesignIsGreen.com.
Is it important for you to develop a financial plan without the potential conflict associated with commission sales? As a fee-only financial planner, I am paid by you and only you, my client. I'm not compensated in any way by the recommendations I provide. Have you heard the phrase, people do not plan to fail, they fail to plan? My experience has shown that this is too often true when considering one's financial future. If you're ready to take action, call me, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner and Certified Divorce Financial Analyst, directly at 602-235-0336. We'll discuss your financial situation and review some small or perhaps large changes that will help you obtain the financial future you desire. Don't let the lack of a plan affect your family's financial future. Call me, Bob Berger, at 602-235-0336 for a free consultation. Again, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner, 602-235-0336.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is the Entrepreneurial Spirit starring Leanne Hull and Craig Dean. You look so cute over there, you guys.
We're sharing a mic. This could be trouble.
Yeah. Oh, this could
I'll
be.
I'll never get a word in.
Yeah. I got pictures. Anyway, this is exciting because we have such special guests. I read up all about these two individuals. Phenomenal talent. In fact, one of my favorite movies, and they'll probably comment later that maybe it was a good depiction or not, is A Tombstone with Kurt Russell and Val Kilmer. In fact, I thought Val Kilmer should have won the Best Actor. Phenomenal performance. You want to do the honors, Leanne or Craig, introducing your guest today?
Well, I'll introduce them. I got to know Terry and Wyatt through my wife, Ellen, in Toastmasters, and this goes back, I think, 26 or 27 years. And we've had some amazing experiences with them. And I've been to several of Terry's plays that she's written. They are so off the wall that it is amazing. She's won awards for them. Wyatt has, I've seen his show that he's done with the story about Wyatt Earp and Tombstone. I've seen and heard him speak many times at Toastmasters. Tremendous speaker. Tremendous. And he's also a great mentor. Ellen is always bragging, there's never a Toastmaster that doesn't go by where Wyatt doesn't bring in two or three people. He's always mentoring somebody. And I think today is going to be very exciting, especially if you're a Phoenician or been in Arizona for many years, because I think we're going to hear things about our state and our history that are very enlightening.
I just want to say something before we lose track of the mentoring part, because I really think that that's the key right now is mentoring, because it means that you have to take your eyes off yourself and on to someone else. And especially in economic hardship and times of crises, if you're always so focused on yourself, things always seem worse. And it's important to take and look at other people's lives. And I think that's really neat that he spends so much time mentoring.
You know, there's no doubt. And just a sample of some of the plays, we're talking about Wyatt Earp, A Life on the Frontier, lingerie, Skimpies, a thing on what's called Skimpies. You won an Arizona Award. I believe it was for, was it for Wyatt Earp, The Life on the Frontier?
Yes.
Incredible. You have things like Dinner with Last Chance Cafe, String of Lights, The Bus Ride, A Touch of Tortilla. What do you have, like 36 plays? I mean, you got a lot of them. That's incredible. And Terry, welcome. Wyatt,
thank you. Nice to be here.
Well, it's been a pleasure. I actually wanted to say it this way. Wyatt and Terry Earp. I always want to say I was in the studio with Wyatt Earp and Terry Earp. Incredible. So, God, there's so many places to start. However, why don't we give a little bit of your, let's say, with Terry, your background. When did you start writing plays?
This is like a second or third career for me. I started in 1988. I have a bachelor's in political science, master's in public administration, and I worked in the insurance business for 10 years.
Talk about reinventing oneself.
Yeah. Yes. I get bored easily. And then in 1988, I had an idea for a story. I didn't know what it was. I'd never had any writing classes. And I looked in a book and thought, oh, I guess it's a play. And so I wrote a play called Dinner at the Last Chance Cafe, and I entered it in a few things. 6 months later, it was picked up by Gettysburg College.
Wow.
And it's had a number of productions since then. But that was my first. And, you know, after 6 months, I thought, oh, this is easy. So I just kept doing it.
And what? And the world's better off for that because, you've inspired and delighted audiences quite a bit. I mean, you have over, 670 performances throughout the U.S., Canada, and Europe just on the play Wyatt Earp, A Life on the Frontier. And Wyatt? That's your play. You're the one-man show, is that right?
Well, I might say, I wouldn't say it's my play because I don't know how many men you know that can be successful speaking in the words that his wife put in his mouth.
Ah, there we go.
I have had
probably
the
a lot of men.
There's a joke in here someplace.
I have had the blessing of, yes, of doing Wyatt Earp A Life on the Frontier in 8 different countries, and if you count Alaska as another country. And,
yeah. And some also, people would, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
And also the other one called The Gentleman Doc Holliday, which is just a real nice contrast to Wyatt and a lot of fun. And we'll be doing that one soon here in the Valley.
Oh, is that right?
And well, you've done close to 400 of
Doc. Yeah.
Oh, that is incredible. Because let me ask you a question, and then we'll get more details. However, the movie Tombstone, starring Kurt Russell and Val Kilmer, was that an accurate depiction, you think, of Wyatt Earp?
Not really, but it was as much as a film dares to do. The great director John Ford was once accosted for his movie My Darling Clementine with Henry Fonda playing Wyatt, and the accosting occurred something like this: Mr. Ford, there's absolutely no historical truth in your play whatsoever, and it's all myth. And he said, well, given the myth or given the history, I always print the myth.
Oh, there.
But the movie Tombstone, I don't want to it does do a lot of good. A good 40% of it is valid. It's just that you have a dilemma with a movie. It's a visual entity, and so every 30 seconds something has to happen, and life doesn't work like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And things tend to not work on a film as well as they do on stage if they're in the chronology of the way they happen. So they move things around a lot in a film. A lot of liberties have to be taken in order to keep it as vigorous as it needs to be as a film.
Yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead.
So Wyatt, everybody's going to wonder, the name. How are you related to Wyatt Earp?
I come down from Wyatt's father's brother, but the DNA, Wyatt's father's, Nicholas's brother, but the DNA didn't fall that far from the tree, and we do look exactly alike, as somebody knows.
Definitely. Yeah,
and it's a blessing, and I treat it reverently.
The big difference is the original Wyatt was a quiet sort of guy. My Wyatt is not a quiet guy.
But if the original Wyatt had gotten on stage and just muttered and said, well, that would not have been very entertaining either. So
no, we all want to be entertained.
it presents its own dilemma.
I think we learn better that way, too. You know, I think if I look at the school situation, if you can teach children, you know, and give them the facts and still be entertained, I think they're going to retain it longer, frankly. I mean, I retain things a lot.
If you're
longer.
Entertained,
yes,
absolutely.
Your point's well taken. And the late, great Cabot Robert, who started the National Speakers mm-hmm. Bureau, was once asked within my earshot, Mr. Roberts, well, how important is it to use humor when you speak? And he said, it's only important if you want to get paid.
Yeah.
And with youngsters, you get paid by their retaining what you say. And it's been a real blessing to get to do the residencies in the schools that we do in which we
Terry definitely used humor in her plays. Yeah. Where does that come from?
I don't know. I just think funny. I'm not a funny person in person, but I just think funny. And I watch people a lot.
Because, you know, to write humor and to do like stand-up comedy is totally different.
Yeah, I did try a little stand-up, and I did okay.
You did real well.
But it's not something I wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
So when you wrote your plays early in your career, I read about Samuel French, the world's number one distributor of plays. You were considering, or maybe you did, have that organization distribute some of your plays, but you decided not to.
No, I decided I do better on my own.
Yeah.
And I have.
So you became not only a playwright, but now a producer. You've been an actress, of course, and still an actress. And so tell us how you switch so many hats, right? We've talked about that.
That's the entrepreneurial spirit, sure.
Yeah, it's incredible. No training as a playwright, and then you became a producer. Tell us the difference between the two.
There was a little training, if I can interrupt, and that is that Terry put a lot of years in the Toastmasters, and both of us will proclaim to our dying day that we learned a lot about theater through the Toastmaster Club.
Well, that's how I found out I could write.
That's right.
Well, you also learn humor. I've been to Toastmasters enough so that everybody knows me as Chop Liver.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
That everybody who gives a speech, those that use humor the best are the best.
They are.
I think actually speaking helps to train your brain to process things better, and I think you'd learn a lot. You're actually learning as you're speaking, and it's just evolving. It's been really interesting. I didn't know that I could speak until I ran for Congress and was put in those circumstances, and then it just came out. So just putting that, and then it just evolved, and there's more. My brain continues to expand because I'm using it. I'm using areas that I didn't know were there.
So when will the talking stop?
Oh. Well, now, apparently, since you took the mic from me.
Yeah, so you have control of this now.
That's right.
This is so good.
At 2:55, Leanne shut down.
That's coming from the horse's mouth or something, huh?
And we have a live audience out there in the green room. Right. Some of my friends have stopped by to see this special edition of The Entrepreneurial Spirit. Now, we only have maybe a minute left before the next break, but there's something I want to touch on, maybe when we get back from the break, is you originally wrote the White Earp, A Life on the Frontier, for actor Hugh O'Brien.
Yes.
And we'll touch on that when we come back from our break, because I think that's interesting, because it's no longer Hugh, it's Wyatt. And I bet you're a great actor. You just sort of look like a Wyatt Earp. I bet you would have done really well in those days as a sheriff, or what was he, a marshal, actually, wasn't he, U.S. Marshal?
He was deputized as U.S. Marshal by his brother when it was necessary, and he was a deputy sheriff a couple times, but he was really never, ever wanting to be a lawman. He wanted to be an entrepreneur, as you may or may not know.
Nice.
And we'll have to dive into that when you get back from your commercial.
Absolutely. See, he is good. He knows a commercial is coming up. He did this great.
I'm thinking that maybe you should leave, Dave, and Wyatt could take over the show.
I am absolutely leaving for Wyatt Earp, and you're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Entrepreneurial Spirit with special guests White and Terry Earp, and starring Leanne Hull and Craig Dean. We'll be right back.
You have found Arizona Station 1010 KXXT. Tolleson, Phoenix.
Tired of getting misinformation? Hi, I'm Carlos Galindo, the host of Straight Talk. Join me Saturday mornings and get real information. Solid information. Information you can use. Politics the way it was meant to be. Right here on KXXT. 10:10 a.m. Saturday mornings at 9 a.m.
Hi, this is Steve Sanchez, and I'm excited about my new home right here at 1010 KXXT, Saturdays from 7 a.m. as we talk about finance, politics, and the culture. Caution, we don't sit around the campfire singing Kumbaya. So catch me every Saturday at 7 a.m. on AM 1010 KXXT.
Are you earning 8% on your money? Hi, I'm Dan Cochimilio. I can guarantee 8% annual growth for future income. That's right, 8% guaranteed annual growth for future income that you can never outlive. It's your money, money that God has put you in charge of managing. Are you a good steward of your money? How do you know if you are? Do you know if your money is 100% safe from market losses? Is your estate planning as good as it could be? Are you trusting the answers to money questions to a person who doesn't share a Christ-centered worldview? I believe there are people out there who don't care about you as much as they care about getting your money. I don't operate that way. I offer free consultation and will help you with estate planning and show you how to double or even triple your money for retirement. My purpose is to help you secure your money. It's that simple. So call me, Dan Cochimilio, at 623-825-3900. That number again is 623-825-3900. That's
623-825-3900. 1010 KXXT.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is The Entrepreneurial Spirit, starring Leanne Hull and Craig Dean. And Craig, I saw you dancing, playing the drums there as the music was going on.
It's a carryover from the opera.
Yeah. Yeah, a different type of music. Who wrote this theme song that we have on Breakthrough Thinking? Who is that? It's Stray Cats. Okay.
I don't know. Who wrote that?
The trip to Hawaii. Stray Cats, he said.
I know. I don't know who wrote it, though.
Oh, I think it was the Stray Cats. Oh. Wasn't it? Who knows? Oh, Brian Setzer. I don't know how Kurt knows.
He's
all
a tomcat.
Anyway, we were talking about originally you wrote the play Wyatt Earp, A Life on the Frontier, for actor Hugh O'Brien. How did you have that in mind? Did he come to you? Did you go to him? What happened there?
What happened was, Hugh O'Brien has an organization called the Hugh O'Brien Youth Foundation, and they're having their international convention here back, I think, in 95-96, and Mr. O'Brien came to town and wanted to do something as a fundraiser for them, and he started contacting all the theaters around town, and he contacted one that I was working out of, and the artistic director said, oh, you need to meet with Terry Earp. She's done a lot of research on the Earps. She's married to Wyatt Earp, and so I sat down with Mr. O'Brien. And, you know, he's about 70 then. And I thought, well, an older Wyatt Earp, looking back on his life. So I wrote a play for him. And he liked it, his people liked it. But he travels all over the world, had no time to rehearse or do something like that. And so it sat in my file for about a year. And I thought, well, duh, why don't I have my Wyatt Earp do it? And so I hired a director, and Wyatt studied with her. And we had the first one at the Care Cultural Center, the ASU Care Cultural Center. And I didn't think anybody would come. I thought, well, a few friends will come, and it'll be an expensive party because I had to pay to, you know, put it up there. It sold out, and then another show sold out, and they just kept selling out wherever we put it up. So I thought, well, gee, this is something pretty good.
That is incredible. 670 performances.
Wow. Later,
It wasn't long after those first few shows, in fact, that we ended up in the International Theatre Festival in Edinburgh, Scotland, and that was just a real thrill to be there among all those wonderful people that were there.
Did the Europeans find your show more captivating than the Americans?
Well, as captivating as Americans, because the Europeans love our Western
right.
history. The Germans are absolutely manic about it.
Absolutely, they are.
And we did...
Jawohl.
Right, a couple of years ago.
Dankeschön.
Yeah, a couple of years ago we did France. And
Gesundheit.
And because of Terry's play about the life story of Nijinsky, we had the good fortune to range as far as Budapest, Hungary with Wyatt Earp.
Yes, because Nijinsky, who's the father of modern dance, His granddaughter lives here in the valley, and she came to see Wyatt Earp show. And she talked to me afterwards and said, I'd like to do something on my grandfather. But, you know, she's a female, so I thought, okay, I'll make her Nijinsky's wife, which was her grandmother. And so I wrote a play for Kinga, and we ended up going to Budapest, where she's from, and where they were from. And one of the things we were going, besides at the stage, we were going over to the university. And do you remember it was English speaking?
Yeah, it was in American University for American Studies over there.
And yes, and the attaché from the embassy came with his people to see Wyatt Earp's show.
That's just incredible. Are you going to put on one of these that show again, Wyatt Earp with A Life on the Frontier, or is that over?
Yes, no. Wyatt Earp, A Life on the Frontier is a signature piece, and we do it like everywhere. But the next shows I have coming up are the Gentleman Doc Holliday, and we'll be doing him the 4th of April in the Palace Saloon in Prescott. And we'll be doing him also on the 25th of March at Sun Lakes over here in over near Chandler. Sun Lakes, you know, Robeson Road and Riggs Road intersection there. And then we'll be doing the Gentleman Doc Holliday April the 30th in Pioneer, Arizona, Pioneer History Village up just north of Carefree Highway, the Pioneer
Village. When are
Village
you doing there. That one?
That's April the 30th. Okay. I just finished doing Wyatt there, and it was quite a thrilling and successful evening, and so they booked me right back in.
I love that venue. I love it there, Pioneer Village.
Well, that's the original first opera house, as you know, in the Arizona Territory. It was in Prescott, and later to become the first Goldwater store, now refurbished and brought to Pioneer as the opera house once again. So it's got its own history.
I'm putting it in my calendar.
Yeah, I want to see that, too, because, you know, a lot of people, and I don't think it was in the movie Tombstones, you know, what type of doctor Doc Holliday was, but he was a dentist, evidently.
He was, in his words, a full-blown graduate of the Pennsylvania School of Dental Surgery, because after the Civil War, the only good schools were in the North, and even in those days, a good education was considered more important than politics and sentiment. And I eventually got used to those Yankees who had committed that war of Northern aggression.
Now, how did Doc Holliday? He talks
that was
about
really good.
That is,
though,
like
when,
I'm
he
on
graduated,
stage,
when he graduated, he made his dental practice in Atlanta, and at the age of 21, he had the largest dental practice in all of Atlanta.
Is that right?
He was a genius.
Wow!
How did he end up in Tombstone?
He came down with tuberculosis, and his uncle, who was an MD, said that he had read where people made complete recoveries if they just moved to a warm, dry climate, eat a nutritious diet, and get plenty of rest. And so he boarded a train west to Texas, and he was in Dallas, Texas with Dr. Seeger, and they had a wonderful dental practice there. They looked by every mouth in Dallas until the panic of 73 hit, and things dropped off, and Doc found himself with some considerable free time on his hands. And pretty soon he found he was pretty good with his dexterity with the cards. And making as much money with the cards as he did looking in the mouse.
How did he become friends with Wyatt Earp?
He saved Wyatt's life. Wyatt was surrounded by desperados in Dodge City, and Doc backed him up and literally saved his life, and they bonded quite well. Also, when he came to Fort Griffin, Texas, even before that, Wyatt was looking for a train robber named Dave Rudabaugh, and Doc's friend Shaughnessy, who owned the Beehive Saloon, he owed him some favors, so he asked Doc to tip Wyatt off to Rudabaugh's hideout. And so Doc asked some questions around town and was pretty soon able to tip him off, and they became fast friends.
Sounds like current-day politics.
It does. And was he really fast on the draw?
To quote Wyatt, Doc was long, lean, ash blonde, about the quickest man he knew with a six-shooter when he was sober, which wasn't often. He said in general he was doing good, just hit a man on the big toe.
Yeah. when I listen to this, I'm looking at Terry because I couldn't imagine writing a play, the research you have to do just on the history of Doc Holliday, Wyatt Earp, the circumstances. How long would it take you to write a play from beginning to end with all the research and development that you would do?
Well, with Doc Holliday, it wasn't that hard because when Wyatt was doing his show in Dodge City, I met Karen Holliday Tanner, who's a relative of Doc Holliday's. And she had just written a book called Doc Holliday, A Family Portrait. And she had a lot of things in there she had access to that nobody else had ever had access to, you know, from his letters and all that. So her book was the most accurate of anything out there. And I asked her permission. And she said, sure, go for it. And so I did. And that's how Doc Holliday came to be.
I'm always fascinated when, like, when I just watch the Oscars, when the playwrights win, how do you put, I just can't even comprehend how you write a play, a script, to get everybody talking and saying and doing, it really boggles me.
I don't know, I just sit at the computer and the voices come out.
That's quite a talent.
That sounds like, yeah. Craig.
Carrie uses a writing technique that's not it's sort of rare. It's not that common, and it's called a stream of consciousness.
Catherine Mansfield.
And she just trips her thinking, and then pretty soon just listens to all the conversations, as she well put it, that come out. And you ought to tell them about Margaret Mitchell too.
Oh, with Doc Holliday, we also found out that Margaret Mitchell, who wrote Gone with the Wind. She based the character of Ashley Wilkes on Doc Holliday.
Oh, wow.
Is that right?
Wow.
Because she married into the family.
She married into the Holliday family.
Is that right?
That's right.
And we don't mean Holiday Express.
Right. She was on Holiday all time then.
Yes, she was.
So, Terry, let me ask you some stuff about on-the-spot theater and then how and why you became a producer as well as get the on-the-spot theater going.
Well, it happened back in around 97. I had a play called, that I just finished, called Menopause the Comedy, not the musical, but the comedy. And I thought, you know, I think this is going to have a run. And I kept contacting the different theaters around town to rent space, and I could get a week or two. And I knew it wouldn't be worth it to do it for that, because I knew it was going to run. And so I heard this one theater was closing shop. And luckily, I got there just in time before they took down the bleachers and everything. And I took it over, and I named it On the Spot Theater, because everything happened on the spot.
That is creative. That's and great, talking, yeah, about improvisation.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that is unbelievable. Is the theater still going?
No, I let it go in, I think, 2004 or so. I just got, I was doing too much of the work. I was writing the scripts. I was at rehearsal every night, at the productions all the time. I was handling box office. I was doing it all. I was exhausted. I was a mess.
That's called passion. I mean, yes. When you're willing to do everything and anything to support your passion, passion is just who you are.
Well, yeah. It's like, why?
And your passion can kill you.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. It can overwhelm you. You've done 600 and some performances.
670.
How do you stay exuberant?
It's very easy because you use the word passion. I have a love for the opportunity to present Wyatt Earp, A Life on the Frontier. And I was joking when I made the comments about my wife putting the words in my mouth I get to speak. But it is a real blessing. And I treat every performance like it's the only one I get to do, and I give everything I have to every performance. And a lot of that comes from the athletic world that I grew up in, where you give every race everything you had, and you tended to race as you trained. And my father taught me many, many years ago to take all the money out of the bank before the finishing line.
You know, it's interesting because you asked that, Craig. I know that for me, throughout the process of giving speeches and stuff, running for Congress, that I would come alive, and it was always new, and it was always fresh. I think if you're doing your gift, if you're doing what you're supposed to do, I know that one time that you spoke for me, and you got so excited, it just came out of you. That's also one of the reasons I like to do that without something written, because then it allows my spirit to speak rather than something that's off of a piece of paper. You're allowed, and I can hear that in Wyatt, and I can hear it in Terry, that it's just something in you that's coming out. And I think that's a gift.
Well, Toastmasters talks about that. Speak from the heart, don't
that's
they?
Right. That's
Isn't
right.
Isn't that one of their the themes
versus,
right there?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's incredible. So when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Terry and Wyatt Earp. Yes, I have said it. Wyatt Earp is in the studio. I don't see the guns. And Craig, you can play the part of Doc Holliday. I'll be...
I'll pull your teeth.
I'll be Ringo. Remember Ringo? Or,
yeah, very well.
Yeah, he was... He was a quick draw, but I think Doc got the best of him, and we'll be right back.
At Beer and Bomb and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
What if your house is on fire, you call 911? The firemen don't know what to do, the truck's got a flat tire, the water hose has a leak, they can't decide what to wear, and everybody wants to drive the truck. This never happens because they have a process, they follow it, they're on the same page. I'll help you put your fires out with a business process. I'm Barbara Haggerty, helping you mind your own business. 602-750-4518. Increase the bottom line now. Even a two-person business needs a process, and I specialize in small business. 602-750-4518.
And welcome back again as Craig Dean is dancing again. I can't believe
scary.
It. So it's Kurt now. It's contagious.
I love the Tomcats.
Yes. Oh, the
Stray Cats.
And this is Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, Entrepreneurial Spirit, starring Leanne Hall, Craig Dean, special in studio guests Wyatt and Terry Earp. Yes, it's true. We have Wyatt in the house. I can't believe it. This is so exciting.
We thought died 100 years ago.
Little did we know.
And I love the movie Tombstone. Now, you know, Kevin Costner also had a movie
That's about that same time.
I didn't like it as much. It might have been more accurate. I don't know.
It's more historically correct but less entertaining, and that's because in a good film, something has to happen every 30 seconds because, as I said earlier, it's visual.
Yeah.
But Kevin Costner's is more historically correct, and it covers more ground. It's just that originally it wasn't put together to be a film. It was going to be a five-part miniseries for television.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then when they slammed and jammed and pushed it together as a film, I think it lost some continuity.
Yeah, I think Tombstone got a lot more exposure.
But when we do the theater presentation, we get to cover all the things that were lightly alluded to there and brought up to. For example, we get to cover the Alaskan days, and we get to cover the prize fighting in California, and we get to cover the horse racing of 14 years in California, and all the other parts of his life that, as he put it, were far, far more interesting than those bloody 30 seconds in Tombstone.
Yeah, I bet. I think that I can't wait to see this play.
Yeah, it's interesting. I grew up in Minnesota,
and you betcha.
And now living in Arizona. Arizona has such a unique history to it that captivates the whole world. Like you said, when you go to Europe, especially Germany, they're just totally turned on about our history. What do you think that is?
I believe that the Europeans look not only at us, as we all know, as a very youthful nation, but also they enjoy our adventurous spirit,
adventurous
our entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah.
And the fact that we, to them, still are a frontier. And I guess the closest thing they have to that is the days of knights and damsels, but we allude to that with our wild frontier in their eyes. In fact, in Germany, there was a man named Karl May who wrote about our old Wild West a la Zane Grey, and for decades was the most popular writer in Germany, but had never seen our West until he was 73 years old.
He was
getting his information from other dime novels that were produced over here at that time.
And Karl May,
I'm sorry, he's spoken of reverently to this day in Germany.
I think in everybody there's that spirit of wanting to be that freedom that the Wild West portrays. Mm. You know, grab your horse and go out and grab some land, and I just think it's very exciting.
Well, the whole thing about coming in covered wagons, what our ancestors went through to come out to the Wild West.
In fact, we have Wyatt's mother's bonnet that she wore going across the country in 1868 when they left Pella, Iowa, and went to what today would be referred to as the San Bernardino area of California, and that was in 1868, and we had the good fortune to have we have that bonnet that she wore at that time. You speak of Europe. I was performing in France, and On the side of a barn was a poster of Kevin Costner, that famous poster of shooting off into the, and it was all in French, but it was from the movie. Kevin Costner put out, and at the West Fest there in France, we had Buffalo soldiers from England. It was the most interesting thing to see Afro English men depicting American Buffalo soldiers with an English accent in France.
I think that was
cross culture to the hilt.
Okay. I think Kurt Russell will want equal treatment though. Don't you think? So a couple things that you mentioned off there, a new project you might be doing. Will Rogers, describe that if you could.
I was riding horseback with a man in California who has the Camino Real Playhouse in San Juan Capistrano, where I performed quite a few times, and his name is Dave Scott, and I looked over at him, and I says, Dave, you know, you look just like Will Rogers, and he says, no, and I says, yes, you do. Haven't people told you that? And he says, no, and I says, you ought to do Will, and he says, no, and I says, this is the man that toured for 2.5 years the biodrama on Jack London, and you're saying you couldn't do Will Rogers? Well, cut to the chase, after a couple years of research, we now have him in the harness, and we've been working on the biodrama on Will Rogers that'll be done by his lookalike to this day, Tom Scott, in California. And it's been a real thrill to work on that project. You know, Will Rogers is so famous for saying, I never met a man I didn't like, but that there's more to that statement. He was a Cherokee Indian, and he says, when you walk up to a man and you meet him, you should get around behind him and look at the world the way he sees it, and then you've got a handle on who you're really talking to.
Wow.
And I have yet to meet a man I never liked, though there were a few that put me to the test.
Wow. So you got so much going to be happening for
very,
you.
Very, yeah, thrilled, very thrilled with that biodrama.
I bet you Terry and Wyatt have some very interesting conversations at the dinner table.
I've told many people, who do you know that could marry their own home entertainment unit?
That's
right. Yeah.
So, Terry, I want to have you tell your story. You are, and I know the word hero is loosely thrown around sometimes, but you have been such an inspiration, a hero, a mentor to so many people, including my wife. She worships the ground you walk on. Could you tell a little bit of your story as to what happened, what was it, 4 or 5 years ago?
4.5 years ago.
4.5 years ago, where you're out for a wonderful bike ride, and go from that into where you are now.
Okay, the irony is, over the last 20, 30 years, I bicycled through the back roads of Germany, France, and Switzerland, all through the Southwest, the Canadian Rockies. I go for a bike ride, an early morning bike ride with Wyatt and another friend. I'm going through a green light. Someone runs a red light at 40 miles an hour and hits me, and I'm now quadriplegic. And it's difficult. I think the part that's hardest for me is I can't really write like I used to, because my hands, I have no control over my hands. But I found a way by putting pencils in my little gloves where I can type on the keyboard. And I've since written a play, a 10-minute play, using the pencil method.
And what's the play you wrote?
It's called The Freedom Trail. It's part of an SB 1070 performing theaters series, and I was one of 10 selected.
Wow. And so, what are some of the lines in that play? Can you?
I couldn't tell you.
But tell them where it's going to be done.
Oh, it's going to be done at ASU West, and it's going to be on March 30th. And March 31st, in front of the legislature, the state legislature, outside. I doubt that we could go in, and all the plays will be done there. And I'll also be directing another play by someone else called Teresa's Story.
And what is that? What's Teresa's Story about?
It was actually taken from an interview with an immigrant. And her story about how her brother was here legally, and she's trying to get here, or it was her husband who was here legally, and she's trying to get up to see him. She couldn't get a visa, so she paid a coyote, and her struggles there, and all the things she goes through.
Well, that's good. That's
okay. And this
good
is on
play.
The 30th at ASU West.
Yes.
At what time? Any idea?
I don't remember. Morning, afternoon,
you think?
It'd be the evening.
Evening, okay.
You know, what I'm really impressed about, like what Craig was saying, I mean, really, I mean, you're probably an inspiration for so many people. The mindset, what does it take? How do you, you know, what continue to drive you to overcome where most people may not have overcome? You know, what were some of the thoughts, the beliefs? Was it your passion that just ignited you to continue?
Yeah, what made you go forward rather than stand still?
Well, the major fear I have in my life is of boredom. Mm-hmm. And that would do it. I mean, if all I had to do is sit in the chair and stare at the TV all day, I'd rather die. I'd just rather die. Mm-hmm. But this way, you know, I belong to a couple of book clubs. I'm performing. I do a Mr. and Mrs. Wyatt Earp piece with Wyatt. I do a Big Nose Kate when she's 80 years old. I do so many different things. I'm as busy now as I ever have been. I don't walk fast, but I have 5 speeds. I can roll. I could just roll along.
You know, it just made me kind of laugh because where are the days where people used to have nicknames? I mean, Leanne has a nickname, LWL, but athletes always had nicknames, you know, back in the old days. Everybody had a nickname. We don't have nicknames anymore.
Terry always says she isn't competitive. She isn't competitive, but I said, where have you been? And she says, I was at Target with Denise. Now, Denise is a friend of hers who's also in the chair. And I said, oh, the aisles are really wide over there. And she says, yes, we're able to go down them side by side. In fact, we had a race. And I said, oh, really? And she snaps right back real fast. Yeah, I won. But Terry's not competitive.
So Terry, let me ask you a question. What can you tell other people when they're in a similar situation? I mean, you got people that are less fortunate. I mean, less fortunate that think that their world has ended. However, under this circumstance, very severe. What can you tell people that just complain about, like their utility bill? I mean, you see people
bad
complain.
Bad hair day or something.
Or whatever. What can you tell people to inspire them right now that it's important to keep going?
Wow. I don't know. Just think it always could be worse. Even now, like the way I am, I see people who are worse off than I am, you know, who've had strokes and can't talk, who can't even do their little knob to make their wheelchair move. I mean, it's so bad, I could be much worse off. And I'm just really lucky to be where I am, and I'm grateful for that. And I didn't have any brain damage, at least not that I'll admit to.
So really an attitude of gratitude. I mean, it goes such a long way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Terry, how has your accident made you a better person? What do you like more about yourself now than maybe you did before?
Well, I do have more time to visit with friends. And I was so busy before, I really didn't have time to do all that. And now I'm just grateful that I have so many friends who care about me, and I appreciate them for what they've done for me. And I think that's what it's done. It's made me more appreciative of what I've got.
Has it changed your relationship with Wyatt?
Oh, yes. I so admire him. In situations like mine, I think 50 to 75% of the spouses will leave.
Absolutely.
And Wyatt has stayed by my side constantly. He's never left my hospital room when I was down here and at Craig Hospital in Denver. And I've been hospitalized a number of times since I've gotten back. And he never leaves my room because he knows I'm terrified at night in hospitals. And I'm just so grateful to him. He's a heck of a guy.
And Wyatt? How has the accident changed your life and you as a person?
I believe, like Terry, it makes you reassess your use of your days. And I suspect that, like her, it's caused me to balance out my life a little more and not be constantly going for the gusto so much. I used to race in triathlons a lot before before the accident, and as you know, to train for the big ones, your wife becomes an athletic widow for a while. And during the training for Hawaii's Ironman, I think Terry was most tolerant to do that for me for a couple races. And so that being said, like Terry, it's caused a great amount of balance to come to our lives and a lot more sensitivity about the value of our friendships.
So it really reprioritizes your values.
It does. It does. It reprioritizes your values. And also we look to people who we see doing such great things as she's doing in their own way. For example, last weekend we attended at the Chandler Center for the Performing Arts Axis Dance, and these are people in chairs. Half the dance troupe are in chairs, and they're quite the athletes, and they do all kinds of astounding things with their chairs and in the chairs, and it's a dance troupe. And you see people doing that, and you say, what excuses have I got? And so we move on.
Yeah, and you know, what comes to mind, too, is that you hear it all the time, really don't take life for granted.
No.
Yeah. I mean, you never should. What can you say about that? Any comments on that?
In a second, everything changes. 1 second. What I'm happy about is, and I don't know what the odds are on this, but they must be astronomical. When I was 26, I was in a car wreck, and I had another broken neck. I was a C7 fracture. But I walked out of the hospital on that one, and I was fine. Never had any arthritis. And then when I'm 56 or 57, I have another wreck, only I'm on my bicycle this time, and I have a C5, C6 fracture. And this time I didn't walk out. But from the first broken neck, I thought, I became very aware how lucky I was that I was able to walk. And I always told myself then, that if I could do anything, if there's anything I wanted to do, I was going to find a way to do it.
So that's an incredible mindset. Think about that.
And it's interesting because virtually every play that I've seen you do and that you write, there's a tremendous amount of humor in it.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any humor that you've gained as a result of being hit by the car?
I'm sure there must be somewhere.
I think Terry was that person before the accident.
Yeah.
She's not deteriorated one iota from the same person she was before the accident intellectually. And humor was there before, and it is now alive and well. And she looks at the world through funny eyes, which is something we learned from.
You said I have funny eyes.
Look through the world
funny,
through funny eyes. And Gene Parrott, who has a comedy writing roundtable, taught us that that's how you come up with good humor. You look at the world through funny eyes.
I'd like to talk a little bit about Jack Durant, you know, because we're talking about the history of Arizona and Phoenix. That was a tremendous play. I absolutely love that play. And I think anybody who's anybody has eaten at Durant's in Phoenix absolutely loves that restaurant. What's a little bit of the history of Jack Durant and how it ties into that restaurant?
Oh, Jack Durant was an interesting person. That might not have been his real name either. He had ties.
Yes.
Yes.
Very interesting ties. He was the bagman for Bugsy Siegel.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Warren Beatty.
When he was in his younger years, full of spit and vinegar, he took the money from Las Vegas over to California to Bugsy Siegel's girlfriend. But then she got too expensive. According to Jack. Go ahead and tell him what happened, though, about the...
What about the play?
Well, okay, Jack had a billboard on North Central,
yes.
As
right.
You all know, that said, yes. In my humble opinion, Jack Durant's the finest eating and drinking establishment in Arizona. And so Terry wrote a play on his life, and it's called In My Humble Opinion.
Oh, is that right?
And it has the right formula of four-point opposition for humor of four characters.
Well, the way the whole play came about was Mabel Leo, who wrote a play about Jack Durant, wrote a book about Jack Durant, came to my theater when I had On the Spot, and she said, I have this book. Do you think we could do anything with it? And I read it and thought, we certainly could. And based on her book, on the facts in there that she had heavily researched, I wrote In My Humble Opinion. And I think it's one of my favorite plays. You know, what people don't know about him, he had a very dark side, But when he died, he left all of his, the employees that have been with him for so many years, part of the trust.
Wow, is that right?
So they were taken care of.
Take care of them the rest of their lives.
Yes.
And he covered all their health care.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very generous with his money. He gave to the hospitals. And
wow, that's phenomenal. I mean, see, everyone, no matter who you are, sometimes you have that kind part of you.
He was a typical restaurateur.
Ah, there you go. Just like
there
right
you
there.
Go. There you go.
Tell him about the silent character in the play, Terry. The invisible character.
Oh, yeah. I have Jack Durant in the play talking to somebody at the bar who's passed out.
Right.
And so he could say anything
that's
he wants.
Craig.
And it's late at night. He's just
musing
and going on. And the bartender's there. But you get to hear the story that he probably didn't tell a lot of people.
Oh, that's is that play still going on, too?
No. That went on for quite a while. And the lead character who played Jack Durant has opened his own theater up in Carefree. And what was another, last year or the year before?
Year before.
He did a production of it.
Ah.
It's still alive. It's just not being done right now. But I wanted to mention that she has four characters in the play. And there's Jack and his bartender and his girl person there. And there's this passed out person at the bar. And you never see who the person is till the very end of the play.
I remember. This is great.
And what would happen is, at the end, the three would come up and take their bow, and then they'd point back to the person at the bar, and he'd get up and stand up. And on any given evening, it could be, you'd never know who it was going to be. One time it was Alvin Adams of the Phoenix Suns.
Oh, is that right?
It was a different person every play.
Another night, it was my barber, Sonny Lucero.
And the Queen of Clean.
Because in all reality, it could be any one of us at any given time.
Oh, I know. Well, people used to love to go to the play to see
who was.
It was like an Alfred Hitchcock film. When is he going to show up?
From exactly.
Yeah.
From the one time you had the couple Williams, or the guy that played for so long on television here in the Valley.
Oh, the children's show.
The children's show, yeah.
Oh, Pat McMahon.
Pat McMahon,
yeah.
The other guy.
Ladmo. Ladmo.
Oh,
yeah.
What's his? Yeah.
Wallace and
Ladmo. That was such
right
a great
there
show.
I know, it was.
So, other than that, what are some of your other favorite plays? Maybe plays that were the hardest to write, but the most rewarding, or the easiest to write, the most well received. What describe some of the plays, because you've written over 36?
36.
That's incredible.
I think of the historical ones. Oh, I've also done one on the artist in Tucson.
DeGrazia.
Ted DeGrazia.
Called The Impossible Eccentric.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Nice.
And Zarco Guerrero, who lives over in Mesa, who had the salsa band Zoom Zoom Zoom, who's a famous mask maker, plays DeGrazia and does a beautiful job of it.
Yeah, so I have the Nijinsky play and that one, and the Durant play. So I have some historical type plays. And the difference in writing those, which I enjoy doing, but are not as much fun because I can't make stuff up. I love to make stuff up.
Ah.
And just pull stuff out of the universe. I love Skimpies. And, of course, Menopause, the comedy.
Love Waits.
Oh, and Love Waits. I think that might be my favorite.
And Love Waits? And what was that about?
An Irish love story.
Oh.
And what happened was, we went over to Ireland with a friend, and she took me to this island, this deserted island. And all she said is, I've got to get you over to Ireland, Terry, because when I was hiking on this island, I just kept having this tremendous sense of you, and that I just knew I had to bring you. And so we took the little boat over there, and as we were hiking up the hill to look down to the village, I just started crying. And when we got to the top of the hill and I looked down to the deserted houses, I started running towards one and said, that's my house.
Wow.
And from there I wrote Love Waits, and based sort of on me.
Was
but
that
I just made up the story.
Was that what was it? Ankle? What was it?
Oh, okay.
Ankle bag.
Ankle. Yeah. Ellen and I went there after.
Oh, really?
After we had seen your play, we were in Ireland and went to that.
It's a small island next to a big island. The big island's name is Ackle. And we went over there with John the Taylor and the Cork, which is what the boats were. And people had names like John the Taylor. And the small island next to it was Ackle Beg. I used to say it begs to be an island. But when the water's up, it's an island. When it's down, it kind of attached to Ackle Island. And this ruins had all the ruins of these little homes were in a row, and then there was a big house at the end, and they all had sheep residue in them and fur and all that sort of thing. But the irony of the wind was blowing like crazy. The irony of the whole thing was that when Terry went into the big one with myself, there was no sound at all. It was perfectly silent.
It was clean.
It was like it had been swept
out. That was my house.
Wow.
It was like someone had been waiting for me.
There's something.
I got the name Thomas. I kept getting the name Thomas. And so that's what I named the love interest in my play.
We had a guy yesterday, he came to play at our church, Phil Keegan, and he is a guitarist, but he played some music. He had a concert last night, and he played some music, and some of it, he's Irish. And the music from Ireland, there's something very stirring, very...
haunting.
Yes, yeah. It's unlike anything else that I've ever heard. It was amazing. I can imagine. You can picture it, you know, in like what you're talking about in Ireland, and what an amazing opportunity for you to be there, Terry.
You know, there's a title on one of your plays that really intrigued me, and I wanted to ask you about it. God's Desk.
Oh, that was fun.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking like, wow, if anyone had a big desk, God would have a big desk and a lot to do. So, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, like you said, God is overworked. But the devil, his desk is clean as a whistle. Nobody asks him for anything, really. And but the ruler is not God or the devil. Their ruler is a woman called IKEA, which is short for I Know It All.
And that doesn't mean she remembers it.
Doesn't mean she remembers it, but she knows it all.
And she had set up Godfrey and what was Satan's name? Anyway, she had set them up to see as an experiment to see which was stronger, good or evil, and whichever one was stronger would get to take over everything.
Interesting. And that's what the play's about?
Yeah, and at one point, they couldn't do it, and...
They're struggling over the soul of a
lawyer.
A person that was in purgatory and wouldn't make his decisions because he said it was ambiguous because he was a lawyer.
There's no such thing. And so they had to win this guy's soul, and whoever won that guy's soul would win.
And the tug of war continued, and they couldn't succeed, so finally IKEA says, okay, job switch. God, you go to hell, and Satan, you go to heaven.
And you're now in charge of good.
How interesting.
Yes.
And then Mother Earth's traveling around there, and she's really upset because she's totally
she's a mess.
Totally putrefied by her gimmeites that live on her surface.
Gimmeites, I love that.
This is kind of like the Will Rogers thing. You don't know somebody until you stand behind them.
That's right. I want to see
and
this
she's
one.
Trashed.
When will this be out? Or is it already out?
It's been out.
We ran it, yeah.
Wow.
We'd love to run any of them again,
I think
though.
Somebody wants to run it now.
Good.
That's a good one. It reminds me of a movie Woody Allen did, Love and Death, where he looked at the world and he goes, the best we could say about God, he's an underachiever. Remember that?
Yes.
That was a good movie. Yes.
It was so
very
many
good.
Great lines,
very
Woody
good.
Allen.
Yes. So what does the future hold for both of you? Let's start with Terry. What's going on? And then we'll go to Wyatt.
Well, I'm working on a play right now. And I'm kind of at a standstill, actually. But I just spend my days working out. I'm swimming a lot. And I've gotten a lot more range of motion since I've been doing that. So I'm religious about that. And I read a lot. And I am a Zony judge. I judge theater. So that's fun.
Wow, you do quite a bit.
Oh, yeah. So I'm not bored.
No, because that's your biggest fear.
That's right.
Boredom.
That's hell.
Yeah.
In fact, just last weekend we saw As You Like It, and Terry.
No, we didn't. It was
A Man for All Seasons. I confused those two. A Man for All Seasons, and Terry was adjudicating that. And then the night before, we were seeing Tom Chapin at Fiddler's Dream, Harry Chapin's brother, who does a fantastic
job. Oh, is that right? Harry Chapin?
Oh, it was wonderful.
It was absolutely wonderful. And he's in Prescott now doing some shows up there. But if you ever had the opportunity to experience Tom Chapin, it is more than well worth it. And over half the albums he puts out are for children. And he's very concerned.
He's won three Grammys.
And he's very concerned.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
He says you got to live your legacy, and I concur with that totally.
Harry Chapin, wow.
His brother, Tom.
Yeah, but Harry. His brother. But Harry, I think,
he was killed
passed away.
He was killed
30 years ago
in an automobile accident.
Yeah, I remember exactly
that.
He was driving a Volkswagen Bug.
Yep.
Got hit by a semi-truck.
Now, what was that?
Great artist, Jim Croce.
Yeah, Jim Croce.
His best song was, I forgot what it
was. Well, the one about Life's a Circle. It was very big. Cast in the Cradle.
Oh, yeah, that one. Yeah, phenomenal song.
The list goes on.
What a storyteller he was. What a storyteller.
And his brother is, the DNA didn't fall far from the tree. His brother is just like him. Just like him.
Wow.
We have a lot of local talent.
We were mesmerized during the experience.
Oh, Leanne just hit the nail right in the head.
We do.
Phoenix.
Lot of local talent. People just don't know. I mean, how much is here and available for us. We don't have to go anywhere. We don't have to leave Phoenix or Prescott or Tucson. I mean, Arizona is just bursting with opportunity for us.
Yeah, you're talking about these cultural things. The one I didn't even hear about them. You know, Leanne and I have been trying our hardest to work with the city to have the city develop a website that lists everything that goes on the city at all times.
I'd like to have something on the news.
Great idea.
You know, a section on the news every day that's, here's the good news of the day.
Right.
Here's the things that you guys can get out and do. We don't hear about that. Wouldn't that be, I would go.
And I'm sure it would resonate with the population here as well as all the shooting and the killing.
We went to
absolutely.
We're also sick of hearing about that, frankly.
We went to a concert at the MIM last Saturday, and I'm trying to remember what the guy's name was, but the Coen brothers did the movie Brothers, Where Art Thou? He sang all of the songs for that movie.
Wonderful. Oh, wow.
And he's from Appalachia, and he lives now in Massachusetts. His songs had such stories to them, and this was at the MIM Museum. There's something going on all the time.
There is.
Everywhere.
Yeah. And the beauty of it all is that Arizona is still an emerging cultural population. Mm-hmm. A lot of places are imploding on themselves, but not Arizona. Arizona is still in a growth mode when it comes to culture, and what a thrill it is to be here at this time.
Yeah, we're working really hard to change that. We're going to continue. It just spurs me on even more.
Absolutely. the difficulty is government works so slowly. I mean, Leanne and I would love to take care of this immediately. When you own your own business, you decide, well, we're going to do it. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Where when it comes to government,
we're not going to rely upon the government.
No,
we're going to do it ourselves.
Right, yeah.
So how about you, Wyatt? What does the future look like for you? I mean, you seem as passionate as ever. I mean,
well, I'm very excited because of the Will Rogers project. It's an opportunity for me to get on the other side of the pen and be doing the writing and a little bit of the directing and seeing a piece come alive that have partially been my creation and partially Will's. Of course, Mr. Rogers was such a phenomenal elocutionist and phenomenal writer that it's more a lot of it's editing more than coming up with anything new, because how could we improve on his words? Though I have come up with a few, like, I have my actor come out and say, you know, Will said the shortest distance between two people is a good laugh, and I hope we have a few here, but, well, no, he didn't say that, but if he'd thought of it, he would have.
Yeah, that is good. Now, tell us about acting to directing and even producing. Terry, you can comment on that too. How different is it? I would suspect it's a lot different being an actress, even a playwright, to a producer. It's got to be hugely different.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it is. But I prefer the producing. But the acting, I enjoy, but it's not something I would give my life to do. So. But the thing I like the most is the playwriting. Just sitting there and coming up with stuff or putting something together. For me, that's where the creativity really is.
You know, it's interesting when you discussed it earlier. It reminds me, the state of mind you probably get into is similar to an athlete, what they call in the zone.
Right. Can you even
describe it? And do you know even how you get into that state? Is it something that you trigger consciously, or is it just something when you think about, okay, it's time to write, you're in the state?
It used to be like you just said, it's time to write, and then I'd just write. I'd sit at the computer, and out it would come. Or sometimes I'd just hear a thought or something, and thought, that would make a good title. I wonder what that's about. And then I'd just start writing.
And it just flows, doesn't it?
Yes.
And acting too, Wyatt? I mean, when you hit the stage, are you just totally in character, or how does that work?
Okay, Terry's material is so strong, and I've ingested it so thoroughly that I can, when I get on stage, when I speak the words, I become the character. You forget yourself and become the character. And as you said, in the zone really means just discarding the person you are and being totally that person with his execution of his feelings and statements about things, whatever they are. And one of the things that Terry has as a rule of writing is that there are three basic fundamental rules that are important to her that she's spoken of many times, and they all begin with the same letter, the letter E. And the first one is edit, and the second one is edit, and the third one is edit. And Terry's axiom is that less is more. And so one of the things, even in directing, I have learned quickly to do is to let the actor themselves find the material as they're ingesting it and getting off book and becoming the character through rehearsal. Sometimes less government is better government. And that's my the directing axiom. As far as the actor himself is concerned, I have, over the years, made him more and more conversational, caused him to have more and more fun with his audience. And probably the best show I ever did of Doc, until recently, I learned through having to do him when I was ill. I had gotten sick at a NASCAR race, and then I had a doc the next day, and I had almost no voice, but a lot of coughing. And
somebody worked that well.
Yeah, somebody said, your method acting is phenomenal. And I said, well, that was no method.
It's called utilization.
It was utilization. But no, Doc is just a lot of fun. Wyatt is pretty straight out. When I finish Wyatt, I'm pretty energized. When I finish Doc, he's all over the landscape emotionally. He's a man sparring with his demons. And when I finish him, I'm exhausted.
Could you give a couple minutes of a favorite part of either Doc or Wyatt that inspires you or that turns you on?
Well, Craig, thank you. One of the things I think is fun to share with people are, because of the fact that it's about the same place, is Wyatt's definition of Dodge City during its violent days and Doc's. Wyatt says Dodge City was sometimes referred to as Deadwood of Kansas or Babylon of the Prairie. I mean, a place where a man could break all 10 commandments, die with his boots on, and be buried in Boot Hill all in one morning.
Nice.
How violent was it?
It was anarchy. It was early American Beirut, uh-huh, if you will.
Oh.
Wyatt had watched these towns of Abilene, Wichita, Kansas, Dodge City go from Buffalo towns to cow towns to anarchy. And in fact, Tombstone, Arizona Territory, was so out of control that the President of the United States wanted to call in the troops and declare martial law, but they were all committed to the Indian problem, and so they went to private enterprise, and Wells Fargo sent in people undercover. And later on, we found out that Wyatt had been on payroll of Wells Fargo along with a lot of other people, clearing to around 1909.
See, it sounds like things haven't changed.
I know. But I wanted to tell you what Doc's definition of the same place was. And again, I had a wonderful dialect coach, and Elaine Stein passed away about a year ago.
Oh, what an amazing
and
woman.
And she took me under her wing and schooled me in the idiomatic expressions, the vernacular, and the accent of the man born Griffin in Georgia. And so Doc says, Dodge is a town which man's got to keep his eye on the door and his back to the wall, and his ear open for the unexpected. Whenever I hear gunfire, I'm flat on the floor. Now, since I left Georgia, I have become intimate with a lot of floors.
You are, I can tell you're a great actor. There's no doubt.
There's more.
What made Wyatt Earp so not only popular, but good at what he did, if the myth is correct?
Wyatt had the capacity to maintain his calm demeanor and his values, and he looked at everything with a very honest eye.
Plus, he had that look. Could I tell him the story about where
sure.
Sadie?
Go right ahead.
This is from Mr. and Mrs. Wyatt Earp, when she's talking about her later years with Wyatt. She says, but then again, Wyatt did not always need guns. Once this thief jumped off the train right here in Vidal and went over to rob the mercantile across the street. Luckily, the owner escaped and sent for the constable, who immediately sent for Wyatt. Now Wyatt, who is in his early 70s and unarmed, calmly walked into the mercantile and told the much younger man to hand over your gun. He did, and after that they made Wyatt a deputy of San Bernardino County. But that's what he do. He just look somebody in the eye and say, hand over your gun. And they did, and he did that in Kansas,
with
too.
Ben Thompson. Ben Thompson knew that Wyatt was not a man who would equivocate anything. And when he said what he had to say, he really was going to back it up and meant it. And he told Ben Thompson, throw your gun on the ground and walk away. And he looked him right in the eye, and Ben did, and he left. And later on, Wyatt was asked, well, what happened? He says, well, I just told him to throw his gun on the ground, and he did. He knew that if he didn't, then I meant business, and that's all there was to it.
He walked this talk, and that's what we need more of, Wyatt Earp these days, right?
Someone who walks the walk and talks the talk. Yeah. How old was Wyatt Earp in the heydays of Tombstone and Doc Holliday?
Wyatt was on the night that Morgan was murdered, it was Wyatt's 34th birthday.
Wow.
Oh.
They were young.
He looked up at
so
the clock and
32
said...
32 to 34.
Wow.
But you know what? That wasn't that young in those days.
And in those days,
that
yes.
You had lived a lot of life by the time you were that age.
They still weren't living with their parents.
But what,
how old
how old was he when he passed away then?
He almost made it to his 81st birthday.
Wow.
Whoa.
He died on January the 13th of 1929.
And it was quite a love story with that.
Yes,
his,
it was.
His wife.
Yes, it was. 47 years.
That is incredible.
And it was brisket that kept him alive.
Yeah. There you go.
You know that's where my husband's from.
Tombstone?
From Tombstone. That's
is
where,
he really?
Yeah, his family still has a ranch down there. That's where he went to Tombstone High. Yeah, so we spent a lot of time down there in Tombstone.
So we only have like 2 minutes left. So how do they contact you? Do you want people to call you to do special performances? How does it work?
We'd be delighted to be accessible to folks, and there's three ways. One is through the website, which is wyatterp.com. Biz, B as in boy, I as in insect, Z as in zebra.
Like showbiz.
Showbiz, yes.
They said in two-part harmony. And then the other is the website, which is Wyatt at wyatterp.biz.
So yeah, that's your email.
That's my email.
Yeah, okay.
My website's wyatterp.biz,
yeah, right.
And the email is Wyatt at wyatterp.biz.
And so what's something you love doing? I mean, do you like to do private performances, or how does this work?
We do both private performances, corporate performances, and I'll be going to Pella, Iowa, for example, to do their opera house in May for the Tulip Festival.
Wow, and so we, wow.
Because that's where Wyatt grew up.
Yeah. That is nice. And we're at the end of the show. Can you believe it already? Wyatt Earp.
Thank you.
Terry Earp, thank you so much. This has been so delightful.
Pleasure was ours.
Leanne Holt, Craig D.
We had fun.
Thank you guys for being here.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Thank
and I can't wait to see some of your plays.
Thank you.
The Doc Holliday one, I just can't wait to see it. And, of course, tomorrow we are on again from 2 to 4. Thank you once again, Wyatt Earp, Terry Earp, and I'm going to bring my gun next time. It's a toy
do
gun.
Do you own one? Yeah, I was
going to
say.
It's a toy gun.
It's
a squirt gun. Yeah. Anyway, we'll see everyone tomorrow.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
That was fun.